Disciplined Investor is all about you, your money, and the markets. Sit back and get ready for this edition of the Disciplined Investor Podcast.
This episode of The Disciplined Investor is sponsored by Horowitz & Company. If you're looking for a portfolio manager, look no further. Horowitz & Company, from seed through harvest, cultivating financial success.
Markets hitting a speed bump, or is that a sinkhole? Election day is right around the corner, hoping for a quick declaration of a winner. Everything you need to know about the history and future of podcasting with a guest that you all have been waiting for. Needs no introduction. All this and much more on episode number 686 of the Disciplined Investor Podcast. Well, hey, and welcome to another great episode of the Disciplined Investor Podcast. Thank you for your ears this week. It's going to be a fun show this week. A really great show, I'm sure of that. I'm Andrew Horowitz, and honestly, there is plenty of market action to talk about. There's all sorts of things happening with regard to maybe the algos being off, and there's a lack of liquidity in the markets, but we're not going to be talking about that this week. We're going to hold that off till Monday. Monday, where we do the Q&A pop-up webinar, where you can ask any questions you want. We'll be covering all of this. We do that every Monday at 4:30 in the afternoon. It's pretty easy to figure out how to get to it. Just go over to thedisciplinedinvestor.com, and on the top right, you can register. You'll get a reminder. You can join in. Any questions you have, well, you can ask. We're going to also talk about what's happening leading up into the election that is just a few days away now. And again, we are hoping for a winner to be declared pretty close to, but we are setting up, of course, for a contested discussion that may unfortunately go out a bit longer than the actual time that we usually would see. So hopefully not too long. But anyway, register for the Q&A pop-up webinar that we put on each and every week. You'll check it out. Now, we have a great guest this week, and I'm going to spend a lot of time because there's a lot of things to talk about. Someone who I've known for a long time, and I really want to get into all about podcasting because we've been doing this for 13, 14 years now, and there's been some changes and some things that haven't changed. There's been a lot of interest in the whole, the way that it's done, how it is presented, but also what are the roots of all this and where is it going? So we're going to get to our guest, and we're going to do it right now. And our guest today is someone who you know, but I don't know if I need to make an introduction. He's known as the Podfather, MTV VJ, and pioneer in the podcasting industry. That's right. We have John Holden on with us today, or better known as Adam Newman.
You're a horrible man, Andrew Horowitz. You know, it's like, Who does an introduction like that? Yeah. I mean, most guests would just walk away.
Adam Curry's with us today, and these are some of the names that you've used, over history on different shows and all, right?
Not Adam Newman, though. That's pretty insulting.
I've seen it that was something you've used.
Oh, wait, you're right. Oh, my goodness. That was Second Life.
Yes, exactly.
Oh, my God. I'd forgotten all about that. Oh, my. Oh, my. Oh, my. Yeah, exactly.
That's at least close to Adam. I mean, what's with the John Holden?
John Holden was, when I was 16, 17, and I was living in the Netherlands, the government controlled the airwaves. So they had four radio stations that you could listen to across the whole country. It's not that big, smaller than Rhode Island. So one was news, one was talk, one was classical music. And then one was popular music, which was basically polka music at the time. It was horrible. I'm not kidding.
Polka.
Yeah, the whole history of the Dutch broadcast system is a podcast unto its own. So there were a lot of, there were pirate radio stations, and I was at the number one pirate radio station in Amsterdam called Decibel Radio. And I mean, these guys were great. I mean, we had antennas on the roof. Every couple of months, the FCC would come by and confiscate everything. It'd be back on the air within 2 or 3 hours. We had incredible community support. We had advertisers from local retailers, and we were playing music that was import from a Chicago warehouse, Frankie Knuckles, I mean, you know, Madonna, but way before, you know, Madonna's, you know, record that had Holiday on it, et cetera. That was released a year before it was re-released and it became a hit.
Wow.
So, but this was, you know, you were clandestine, so you couldn't use your real name. And I can't remember. I'm pretty sure it was like John Holden sounds a bit like John Holmes. That sounds like the 16-year-old me would like that joke, you know.
Of course.
The funny thing was, is I was actually committing blackface on the radio as Hotep Jesus and I discussed the other day on his show, because people thought, because I would do the show in English, and people thought that I was black. And then, you know, because just the way my voice was when I was talking, you know, it was much more accentuated back then.
Yeah.
So, and I kind of took that on. You know, I was like, yeah, that's right. I'm 24. I'm black. I drive a Harley. I mean, that was.
Oh boy.
All in good jest, of course.
Of course.
But yeah.
I want you to take us back to where some of this all started. So and by the way, I don't know if you can pump it through our system right now, but I know you have a lot of noisemakers and things like that. See, one of the things that's great about the No Agenda show is that Adam runs this thing. I mean, John sits there. He squeaks his chair every once in a while. Basically, that's the limitation. A bell, and I think a noisemaker of some sort that's all manual.
Yeah, let me just grab it for a second. Oh, hold on. Oh, no.
Right. Yeah, there you go.
So, we got it. You name it, we got it. It's all here.
So feel free to use them if you need to.
Manual noisemakers.
Yeah. And we get constant complaints, people sending, you know, threatening to send us bottles of WD-40 to get rid of that goddamn squeak in the chair every Tuesday night. But
No. Now it's just become a thing. We even have songs about it.
Do you really?
Yeah, the old jingle. So here. Yeah. No, I'm not going to tease you. This is a little excerpt.
Tune into here, the best media deconstruction.
Here it comes.
While the forex chair gently squeaks.
Told you. That's unbelievable. This is not new.
Seriously, what's so impressive is because I run a show and I have a board and I have multiple things to click and press and buttons and all this stuff. But seriously, all kidding aside, it's pretty impressive how you not only run that, that's number one, but have it organized in a way that you can actually bring all this into a show on a regular basis. That's impressive. This week's No Agenda show, as a matter of fact, you brought a clip. I don't remember what topic was, but it was like 5 years ago. And you're like, let me see if I can find this clip. And you brought the clip in from 5 years ago. And it was very clear that this was not a planned issue. It was not, you know. So how do you, I mean, you have a pretty good organizational system there, right?
Well, there's two parts to my system. Yes, I do. And thank you for saying that, because I take great pride in what we call the show notes, where all of our clips that we use, and we use up to 40 or 50 clips in a 3-hour show. I mean, and these are short, boom, boom, boom. And we're using a lot of them just to accentuate, because we deconstruct media, but also every single story, there's an archive version. So, you know, if the original goes away, we have basically a text version of it. We have search engines for this, bingit.io.
There you go.
And
bing it.
And with clips, I've been doing this stuff for 40 years, Andrew. So I've been through a number of systems, but it's two parts. One is I just have everything on a gigantic hard drive. Now it is organized by date and by show, but I use a free software program called Everything. Mm-hmm. It's a little search applet, and you can set it to, you know, with some regular expressions. So it basically, I'm only looking for certain types of files, so I won't find PDFs or anything else like that. And because I produce the show, I name all of my clips. It's always interesting. John's clips, he labels himself, but sometimes they're so wacky, you know, uppercase, lowercase, mixed up spelling. I mean, it's a running joke that I remember all that. So, but I remember clips from 5 years ago, and then I just go in and I just hit a couple of keywords until it hits, and then I kind of pattern recognize. Oh yeah, I see this clip. And literally, by the way, it's written. The title is written. I can remember what the clip is about. What I'm not good at is remembering what you're referring to from just 3 days ago.
Yeah, well,
so,
right.
So I can't remember what the conversation was exactly or what clip I retrieved.
Well, that's simple brain function decay over the years at your age is what that is.
Yeah, although, I have incredible focus. That's, with things that I'm very interested in. That's actually one of my superpowers. And, you get Tourette's and then you get a superpower along with that.
It's a combo plan. It's a buy one, get one.
It's a combo platter. No, you give some, you take some. That's mm-hmm. how it works.
Right.
And this is, I'm not unique in this. This is kind of an established thing, particularly when it comes to focus. So, when I'm in the studio and I have, my cockpit around me, I'm focused, man. I'm part of the machine. So, right. There's no real system that can teach you how to do this. You know who else could do this? Jackie the Joke Man.
Howard Stern days?
I'm Fred. Fred from Howard Stern.
Okay.
Fred could retrieve clips with incredible speed. I'm sure I don't know if he's still there, but he was able to do that too. And it's really just, regular expression search. And then, okay, is it maybe this? And the trick is to do it while you're having a conversation with someone.
So I want to go back. I want to do a bit of a timeline here. So let's go back. We did the Dutch Pirate Radio. What came after that? Was it MTV right after that?
No. First it was building my own transmitter at 15.
Oh.
Then it was working at that's how I started.
Did you do CBs and single sideband?
I was into CBs and single sideband, and we'd snip the diode on our realistic Radio Shack SSB rigs, and we could then go up into the 10-meter band where it was much quieter. Of course, that's an amateur band, so it was illegal. The whole thing was illegal in the Netherlands.
Really?
I had antennas. My parents were pretty cool about that, yeah. Oh, no, it was always illegal. There were lots of people doing it, but it's, like any good socialist country, everything's illegal. People do it anyway.
I mean, as I grew up, I had a CB. We had a 5/8 wave on the roof that I had my mm-hmm. dad strap on the chimney, and we ran the wire down.
So you had a half wavelength, the GPA probably.
Yep. Yep. And I had a CB, and the big thing was I was always, I think I showed you that microphone I saw the microphone I always loved that I sent you a text of recently, which was the stand-up. I don't remember what it was called.
Oh, yeah. Exactly.
Looked it up. I didn't have that one. I had a different one that was okay. It was like a ceramic-based one. Mm-hmm. But my buddy Josh mm-hmm. had a single sideband. What we'd do is we'd stay up really late at night and somehow be totally loving the fact that supposedly we were able to get Puerto Rico. We were talking to somebody, sure. CQDX and this whole thing we were doing.
And wait a minute. I don't know if you can hear the echo when I do it. CQDX, CQDX, CQ, CQ, CQDX. You don't hear the echo, do you?
No.
Oh, it's too bad. I got the echo up here, but it just doesn't flow through.
Yeah, and we'd do that, and somebody said, we're calling you, talking to you from Puerto Rico. Now, the guy could have been three doors down. We didn't care. We were all excited about the whole thing. All right, fast forward.
That's when you got your skip at night. You got the skip.
Right. Is that what it was?
Anyway, so always into that. Built my first FM transmitter when I was 15. My mom drove me around the block to see how far my signal would reach. And, that's when I first realized, because I was just playing a record, that kids in the neighborhood, and I was a geeky, nerdy kid, and I was American in a foreign country, so I had a whole bunch of strikes against me. But they were digging it. It's like, oh, man, that's your signal? That's kind of cool. Remember, polka music. Then I built a little mixer, had two record players. I was playing David Bowie, Sound and Vision. I was playing Detroit Spinners, Rubber Band Man. I was playing Stevie Wonder, Elton John, Blue Moves album. And I got a microphone and then I started to talk and kids would say, oh, that was really cool. And then so I kind of got into that, had an audience. Then because you had to be 16, but I was 15 and got a volunteer gig at a closed hospital radio station right near Amsterdam, which was great because your audience was captive. They weren't going anywhere.
Bed ribbon. The only better thing could have been a prison, but yeah.
Well, what was cool about that is they had a very professional studio, and I didn't get hired as a host right away, but as an engineer. So I'd go in, I had the key, so I'd go in on, whenever I could to practice, and I'd bring out a mic, and I'd be, just recording myself and trying to improve what I wanted to be doing. But when we did the shows, what we learned was we really learned how to interact with an audience. And, so we would typically go around with pieces of paper saying, hey, do you have any requests and sign up for, we'll play your song. But when we went to the kids' ward, we said, hey, why don't you just come down to the studio? Because the studio is in the corner of a an auditorium, and there was, you know, the double pane glass was there, so you could see the audience, and the audience could see you doing the show. So we just brought these kids down and played their requests, and we were playing like bumper beds and shit, and just going crazy with them. I learned how to reinsert an IV.
Oh, nice!
That kind of stuff
comes in handy.
but I really understood how important the audience is, and how you need to listen to the audience. So then I went to the pirate station. Then I actually went off to college. I wanted to study communications, and I wanted to be at a school where I could be on the radio station as a freshman, which not many would allow. And I found one in West Virginia, not WVU. And actually this was Salem College in Salem, West Virginia. And it was kind of a half, like a mixed school. Half of the kids were kind of from South Jersey, black kids and white kids, just all kind of mingled together back when there was no issue. And Tyree Hamilton was my roommate. So I had a lot of musical similarities with my roommate, which was great. Cause you know, he probably thought I was going to, you know, be blasting Bob Seger all day long. When I pull up my boombox, I'm playing Shannon, Let the Music Play. He's like, okay.
You're bringing back memories, the boombox and all that. Oh, yeah.
Oh, hell yeah. That was great times, really good times. Yeah. But I was running the radio station within a month, and it was a 10-watt WITB. We're in the basement, or we're into bong hits. We're in the basement. 91.1 FM. Yeah. And so I was bored, and I looked around, and I was like, kids were like, how much can I drink? How much weed can I smoke? I'm like, dude, I'm from Amsterdam. This is boring. So I quit, went back, and my parents gave me this ultimatum. They said, look, you can come back, but either you're going back to school here in the Netherlands, or you have a job, you're paying rent, or you get out. Hmm. And to be fair, my dad was shilling some kind of thing he was trying to sell called the self-marketing toolkit, and it showed you how to write a CV and a letter in a little bit different way. And I sent one off to Lex Harding, who came from the real pirate ships in the North Sea in the Netherlands. And one of these pirate ships had garnered a couple of hours a day or a week really on the official Dutch broadcast stations, which was revolutionary because they were, you know, this was the things were changing now. And actually the listeners had protested in The Hague where the government was. And so these guys had like a Friday from, I think, 10 a.m. to maybe 9 p.m. And they also got a couple hours of TV, which they really didn't know what to do with because they were all radio guys. So they did what all radio guys do, is you put music on television. Mm. So they had the show called Countdown, and it was pretty popular. And the guy who was hosting it was about to leave, which no one knew. He was going to a competitive station. And they were looking for somebody. And I just sent in this note and a video of some of the stuff I was doing. And he invited me to have a chat. And we talked and said, well, you know, I think you're going to host Countdown next week. I'm like, what? What? So I was on television a week later. Half the country watched, because there were four radio stations, but only two television channels. Both of them on from 7 a.m. to 11:30 p.m.
Now, what year was this?
And this is 84.
Okay.
83, 84. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Things change after that. And I was doing that for, I guess, 3.5 years. And I got a call one day from Steve Leeds in New York. And he said, hey, it's Steve from MTV. You want to come and work for us? And I knew that they were thinking of doing MTV Europe at the time. At least there was rumor in the market. And I said, well, Europe or New York? He said, no, New York. I said, okay.
Okay. I'll be right there.
Okay.
Let me think
kinda
about
like
it.
Kind of like the SNL skit. Okay. Okay. That's fine. Okay. And, then did MTV and, then from there went into some other things.
So let's talk about MTV real quickly, just real quick. What was your favorite interview?
My favorite interview was never on MTV or on television at all, actually. It was Quincy Jones, who I interviewed live on Hitline USA, coast to coast, for an hour, with call-ins and stuff. And I've always been super impressed by Quincy Jones, from Lena Horne to Fresh Prince of Bel-Air. You know, this is quite a career he's had there. Yeah. But he brought a bottle of Latour. From his own collection. And he sat down, put the bottle in the middle, said, okay, let's have a good time. Wow. And, you know, we got pretty hammered. You know, we drank that pretty fast, like, and I was just so impressed by him. So that was my all-time favorite interview.
And then you did Adam Curry's top 30 hits from 1991 to 1994.
Yeah, that was the Adam Curry's top 30 hit list, syndicated radio show. It's kind of fun, because, you know, this was, I ushered in digital audio editing at the time. These shows were done on 24 tracks, studios over multiple days. And I taught the audio engineer at Z100 in New York, which was the flagship station for New York, but also for my show. I taught him how to use the early Pro Tools. And so we were able to knock this down to like an 8-hour process. And we distributed on CD and it went to all the stations. The only catch was, in order to, and so the way this works is, you know, the station runs it for free. I don't charge them. They don't pay me anything, but I get 4 slots an hour for commercials that I can sell to a national sponsor, and then they can sell the other 2 or 3 slots per hour. Mm-hmm. That's how good syndication works. Mm-hmm. So we had Pepsi and Reebok and, you know, a bunch of really good names, but you still have to clear the station. So the station agrees that they'll do this. And of course, that was the hook. It's like, well, you know, hey, Bemidji, Minnesota, tell you what, I'll come and host your B96 summer jam, if you promise to run the show for a year. So I was literally on the road every weekend, sometimes pitching for, you know, weeks on end with Marky Mark and the Funky Bunch and Vanilla Ice, all kinds of groovy,
the early
groovy
90s.
People.
Oh, yeah. Those.
Yeah, great. Man. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, I'm a big 80s fan, 80s music fan.
I know. Like, I know. Big. You always want me to go on that stupid cruise with you.
I know. Well, that's unfortunately has met a terrible death. The cruise.
Demise. A demise. Yes.
So then you started thinking about.
I hadn't considered. Are you sad about the cruise industry? Because that's kind of your thing. You like doing that.
I had a trip planned for this year. 2 trips. One was to Ireland to just check it out, and then Mallorca to check that out.
Yeah.
And then I had in December this cruise, this very small cruise, about 150 people throughout India, all the ports of India. So I'm a little bit bummed about that. And there's a couple other cruises I like. I'm in Florida. It's easy to hop on a cruise 5 minutes away from my house, honestly, and just go for a weekend of just drinking, eating, having a good time. So I'm kind of, and especially if you bring the family, you know, it's very cost effective. It's very easy. Everybody does whatever they want, you know, but... I am actually coming to your neck. Well, in your general vicinity in November, I'm supposed to be going to Houston and go to my buddy's lake house hunting and fishing for a while. But Houston's not too.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Not too close to you. Now, let's get into the podcast discussion. What was the idea behind it? Hold on.
For your listeners, yes. I would like to not skip one chapter of my life.
Okay.
Especially for your listeners. And this is always skipped. I am surprised, Andrew.
Uh-oh. Let me think.
MTV's. I took a company public on NASDAQ in 1996. How can you skip this?
You know what? I was just, I don't know. I'm bad of me. Bad of me. Okay.
We don't have to discuss it. I just want your people to know that I took a company public, and it was a lot of fun. I'm glad I did it, and I'll never do it again.
You had like 4,000 employees in that company, didn't you?
700.
Oh, well.
Yeah, I'm not quite 4,000.
Well. The 700 worked like 4,000 under your tutelage.
Of course, Andrew, of course.
Tell me about that. Tell me about the company.
It was called Think New Ideas, and it came out of 2 companies, really. I had started OnRamp, which was building the first websites for big brands, but we're also doing all the content and the marketing around it, and really a turnkey service. So we had... interestingly enough, we had Reebok, we had Anheuser-Busch, Budweiser.com. We put that on the internet.
Huh.
Tampax.com, the website you'll visit more than once a month.
Naturally.
We put that. That's also one of our slogans. It's true. They loved it. They really? Loved it at the time.
Did they?
Yeah. They were still Tam brands then before they became Procter & Gamble.
Mm-hmm.
Continental Airlines, Mopar, Chevrolet, and just Chrysler, I should say, Gillette, all just incredible big brands and cool content, all kinds of fun stuff that we were doing. And Omnicom wanted to buy us. Omnicom, and this was John Wren himself. He came over and courted us eventually. And he was buying up agencies, agency.com, Razorfish. And he was trying to put together something called the Communicade Group, which, you know, we liked because, you know, it would put some coin in our pocket. And mm-hmm. we weren't that big yet. But then there were these other guys from LA, and they said, hey, you know, we've got this traditional design company. We have all the marketing, you know, kind of the traditional stuff. Why don't we become a full agency, and we'll roll up and we'll buy a whole bunch of other companies. And my partner at the time, Ron Bloom, and I, we said, this will be fun, man. What the hell? Let's just do it. But John Wren wouldn't let us off the hook. So he took 17% pre-IPO, which was really interesting at the IPO, or really at pricing, because we couldn't go out under $7. And of course that, you know, the infamous night before, oh, well, guys, yeah, no, we got to price it at $6. No, there's all, look at the notes, man. We can't go out under $7 because it undervalues Omnicom's pre-IPO investment. Mm-hmm. And so we wound up hitting the tape. We walked the IPO that night. We said, fuck it, we're going. Bye. And we left. And that was like baller. Baller move, man. Oh, right. That was a brown shoe firm. Yeah, it was like a small company because we had tried Lehman and they were just, they were idiots. I couldn't stand that. So it was also a very small raise. It was only $15 million. I mean, this was just like a year and a half before the big crazy valuations. So we did everything wrong. But we got out, not a great IPO, $7, $7.25, $7.35, closed, you know, maybe 701, something like that.
Just to keep it up there. Just to keep it above seven.
Then the underwriter didn't want to take the shoe and, you know, all these things that make you look kind of dorky. So, and then, you know, we did roll up, you know, we bought 15 companies and we were profitable, you know, by a penny, but we were profitable. I don't think we ever had an unprofitable quarter. I do remember, just as a fun anecdote, I do remember we were going to miss our numbers by a penny, but it would be penny negatives, maybe by 2 pennies then. This was a big operation. It was a big ass spreadsheet to get all the numbers every quarter.
You're a conglomerate at this point.
Yeah. And the roll up made it. Maybe we had good IT and I was responsible for that. So we were able to communicate effectively at least, but still it's a big deal. So we called Brandon and said, hey, just so you know, we're going to miss. And he says, well, you missed. I said, we're missing this penny. Yeah, hold on a second. Let me send my boys from Arthur Anderson over.
Oh, a little tailoring of the earnings.
They found a penny.
Of course they did.
They found a penny.
Yep.
I was stuck under the couch. it was debilitating. The reporting was, although I understand that it was, you know, because you also had to manage your clients' expectations because they were public companies and like, oh, you guys missed your quarters. Should we be worried about something? You know, it's like, oh my God, spent more time handholding than we did getting anything done. Eventually, we merged it into another public company and it became AnswerThink, ANSR, I think was the ticker. I don't know if they're still around. They may have merged again, but the value was, we had a run rate of $425 million a year.
AnswerThink IPO'd, right?
AnswerThink. They were public. We merged.
I remember somewhere along the line, something coming out, and I actually picked some of that up.
It was good. That they did okay, I think, AnswerThink.
Yeah, that was way back. But yeah, I remember something.
Yeah, it must have been 99, no, 2000, late 2000. It was before it got real messy. So we did everything right by the investors. We just didn't make everybody a billionaire.
Right. Well, there's still a second act. Still a chance.
Yeah. Not on the markets, man. No way.
So now here we are bringing it up to date. Original podcast idea came. I think the original podcast it did was the Daily Source Code.
Mm-hmm.
And what was the differential there? It was all about we had the internet, right? Was that the point versus airways?
Well, the main point was we had always on internet. We had cable modems. So the cable modem, for those who are too young to remember, replaced the dial-up modem and you weren't taking up a phone line. So it was great. It wasn't fast. It wasn't that much faster, a little bit. It was quirky. But in the Netherlands, where I lived at the time, in 2000, it was there. So it was advanced. But you still couldn't really, you know, get an experience. If you clicked on a movie file or an MP3 file, it would, you know, click, wait, download. Yeah. And then, you know, it'd finally play. So I had this idea that I presented to Dave Weiner, who was building RSS for blogs, you know, this syndication format. I said, well, what if we somehow bake this in so that, you know, a program on my computer knows that I want to listen or to this or watch this, and then downloads it for me automatically because it sees it in, you know, in some publisher's file, and then just alerts me when it's actually there. And I flew to New York actually to convince Dave to do this, and he did after a couple of days. And so the core functionality of the enclosure tag in the RSS feed for podcasting had been implemented by 2000, and we just kind of were using it back and forth until 2003. And around then, and that's because I saw an iPod for the first time. And I looked at this thing, and I go, this is not a jukebox. This is a radio. This is a radio receiver. This looks like that little Sony transistor radio I used to have that my grandmother gave me. So I promptly kind of wired it up to this existing thing, this RSS feed with an enclosure, I'd built an Apple script. So that would download the file, put it on my iPod, and then, you know, I'd be good to go. Just pick it up and the new show was there. And so I started making a show called The Daily Source Code, which I made specifically because I was online kind of building a community of software developers who are now creating a better podcatcher or podcast app, for lack of a better word. Because obviously my Apple script was very, you know, flaky, and it was just a thing I'd strung together. Now we needed a real program, one for Windows, one for Mac. You know, that interacted with the iPod, but also the current MP3 players of the day, since no one knew that the iPod was going to be the success that it became. So it was a feedback loop that I created. So I would be using the technology everybody was creating and building together, so they had something useful every single day to test against. Okay, what is it like when you subscribe to a feed that already has 5 episodes in it? Oh, turns out you don't want to download all at the same time, you know, that kind of stuff.
Yeah, I had to.
So that's
what was your first MP3 player that you had?
I think the iRiver.
I don't know what that is in the range, but I had the Diamond Rio. Remember that one?
Okay, that was actually a little bit before the iPod, and most people felt that the Rio got gypped by not becoming the device of the century, and that the iPod became it. It was a good working device.
It was a good working device, but it was very difficult to get music on and off of it. It wasn't automated in any way, and it only had like 64 megs, so you had like, you know, you had like 10 songs or something like that, or whatever it was, and then you're like, okay, I've heard these 42 times. Oh, let me go try to figure out how to move them on and off again.
If you remember, that's what Steve Jobs used as one of the many differentiators, is saying, oh, you can have 10,000 songs on your iPod or whatever it was. You know, it's like, oh, your whole music library can fit on here. That was one of the big ones he was selling.
Yep. So, yeah, the Daily Source Code. Now, I have a couple of things I want to talk about this. Here we go. I just got the delivery of the Diamond Rio. I have it in my top drawer. It's a blue version right here. The Diamond Rio. You know what it says on the back? It says Diamond Rio, audible ready. It still has a battery in it. I wonder if this thing actually works. Digital audio player. It's clear. You can see all the circuit boards in here. Diamond. Yep. Let's got to check this out. Yep. There it is.
Good times.
There it is. So let's get into... First of all, I want to kind of bring it all the way forward. Over the last couple of years, we've seen an incredible uptake on podcasts, right? Everybody, everybody's got a podcast. And by the way, I got a pet peeve. These people calling it a pod, does that piss you off? Because it really aggravates me.
Yes, it does, actually. I don't know. This was a topic of discussion on the No Agenda show just the other day.
I didn't hear this.
Because
every time somebody puts pod on Twitter, I'm like, dude, I'd rather you call it a cast. Is that kind of...
You know, it's worse than that. I heard someone... Actually, I read an invite yesterday to something known as a podinar.
Uh-oh.
So we've taken webinar, and now we've made podinar. Ugh. It's disgusting.
Yeah. I mean, I have a website called when Dvorak and I were first getting together, I was thinking about names of the show. So I had like the Pod Couple. I got that. I own that website. I have Pod Snobs. I own that one. So when I was thinking about what we're going to do. But all right. So but over the last couple of years, it's really advanced. It's not necessarily technology. There's been no change to the whole enclosure feature. Nothing changed in the RSS feeds. Right. So what's happened? Microphones easier to get?
No. Podcasting is old, as you know, 16 years old. And what happened was, just as it was starting to garner steam, and I was leading a lot of that, at least I was the person being interviewed most of the time, a competitive, I was running Pod Show in San Francisco, which was what I thought would be a podcasting network. And it's a whole nother thing. I don't believe those actually work very well. But there was a competitor coming online that we heard about, and people had seen demos, and they were using the latest Flash, and it was going to be create and listen in the Flash interface. And we were like, oh shit, man, should we be worried? And the company was called Odeo. And while we were plugging ahead, we were kind of waiting. Nothing was really happening with them. There's one thing I'd seen or heard about is, instead of using the subscribe mechanism, which at the time was even a little complicated to explain to people, because when you said subscribe, they immediately thought, oh, it's going to cost me money. They used a term which was follow. And I liked that a lot. And I thought it was very smart. And lo and behold, they pivoted, never released as a podcast company, but Odeo became Twitter. And so the actual original infrastructure and structure of Twitter was a podcasting company, and actually the publish and subscribe mechanism, or at least the concept of it, that podcasting is.
Wow. I didn't know. I did not know that.
Yeah. So Twitter garnered a lot of steam. I mean, everybody's like, oh, another Twitter fail whale. That was the funniest thing. It's like, can we bring Twitter down?
Right.
And then Facebook started opening up outside of the .edu domain. YouTube came online. So podcasting got completely pushed down the stack. And if you're not in the news, you don't exist. But things continue to build slowly. John C. Dvorak and I built our show. You built your show you were very early on. You built your show over that period. And, you know, there was appreciation for what we did. Apple really, although I gave them the original index to start their podcast store or area on iTunes, they were really only featuring mainstream podcasts, which, you know, just look today, Joe Rogan's number one. So the mainstream has definitely changed from public radio and NPR. And by the way, props to public radio, props to Tony Khan, WGBH in Boston. He dragged public radio into podcasting very early on, a great champion. But it was kind of, the exciting thing was all the crazy people, the crazy voices, the new voices, stuff you'd never heard before. It doesn't matter how it sounded. It was kind of slumbering all along. Meanwhile, we had the streaming wars heat up. We have Amazon with the Prime Video. We've got Netflix. And people, thanks to Netflix, I would say mainly, get into binge watching. So now we're in 2008, 9, 10, somewhere in that area, binge watching. House of Cards, probably.
And that was the first.
People were going. And actually, it was probably Hulu came out with Breaking Bad. Breaking Bad.
That was on Hulu? People were that was Hulu first?
I don't remember. Yeah. Wherever it was.
All right, yeah.
And people were binge watching 5, 6 seasons. It was insane. I did it myself. And then somehow, because it's a very popular topic, probably, a true crime drama podcast called Serial came on the scene. And people are obsessed with true crime.
Yeah.
They love true crime. But this was very interesting. Serial was doing the opposite. They were saying, hey, check this out. And you came in, oh, look, there's 2 episodes here. Great. Listen, oh, I'm totally enthralled. I love it. Theater of the mind, great production. People get sucked in. It's very, I mean, the product is outstanding. And then, well, what happens next? No, you have to wait until next week. This drove people nuts. So they, you know, they'd be talking online about it. So it just went viral. And then from there, people, just new people, but also people rediscovered podcasting. And it just took off again because it is a great idea. And it's the right time. And now I mean, when we're literally talking about freedom of speech, that is what podcasting is. It's speech that is free to travel around the internet at lightning speed.
But the thing is, with freedom of speech also comes, I mean, I'm a big fan of quality of show. And obviously, it's going to be survival of the fittest, right? If there's a show that just sucks, it's not going to make it, you know? But everybody has their pods these days, you know, even if they...
If you say that one more time, I'm never going to speak to you again.
But, you know, seriously, everybody has a show. If you don't have it, it's like the old days when I had my blog, right? And now they have a show. But anyway, let's talk about you and John C. Dvorak getting together, do No Agenda podcast Thursdays and Sundays. I know this because I say it all the time on DH Unplugged. Thursdays and Sundays, 12 noon, live streaming or any great podcast platform you can find it. I want to talk to you about something that you do differently than others, and that is the business side of the podcast. You have what's called a value for value proposition, which is, and you fill in the blank, please.
Value for value is where instead of saying you have to pay us a set amount or you can't listen if you don't pay or you must pay at all, we say you're listening to this podcast. Are you getting any value from it? Now, that's very open-ended because value can be you learned something, you laughed, you know, even if you were pissed off, you're listening. So time is value. I mean, time is a valuable commodity. It's the one thing we all kind of have and don't know how much of it we have. So you're spending your time. What is that worth to you? And the way we would like to see that in return is with time, talent, or treasure. So either you give us some value in your time by analyzing something. Oh, by the way, we're not calling you listeners in this case. We're calling you producers. We all have to do this show together. There's no way we can do it without a staff, and there's no way we could ever afford the staff that we need. So a lot of you are going to have to just put in the time and help us. So, you know, if I need to understand PCR, polymer chain reaction, and its theory and how many cycles you need before you always get positive results or what does that even mean, then I have 5-6 lab technicians, PhD and laboratory analytics emailing me with their personal and professional opinions. But the same goes for talent. I played that little song of Dvorak's chair gently squeaks. That's talent handed to us by our producers. That's very valuable. I mean, yeah, it's not money in my pocket, but I can't pay for it with that without money in my pocket anyway.
That production with Jennifer Buchanan does on No Agenda Animated, for example, or any of the producers that bring to you the various jingles and clips and all that, for example. And by the way, I just thought of this. Did you shake the rain stick for Florida recently because it was bad week?
No.
Okay.
I'm
not blaming you.
No, the last we did was for Oregon. And it was right on schedule. 5 days later, it rained.
Okay. All right. Just checking because we had like 11 inches down here. It was really quite unbelievable.
Well, sometimes you can get a splatter off the back end, but usually it's just here in Austin.
I got it.
It wasn't us. Maybe some other rain stick abuse.
Right. So you have things like, you know, for example, if somebody needs a little karma, for example, for their jobs, people write in.
Well, let me finish the model.
Yes, sir.
That part is next. Because this is really fundamental. The same, I mentioned a search engine, Bing at .io. I don't pay anybody for that. One of our producers who loves the show and has that talent made that. Our entire infrastructure for our hosting, we have a lot of bandwidth and traffic requirements. We have Mark Void Zero, who has been doing this for us almost from day one. And so it's time, talent, treasure. Now, we can't operate without paying the bills. And for many people who don't have the specific time or talent, they like to support us financially. And instead of saying, you know, put in for a schedule, we just leave it completely open. We said, and by the way, I don't want to devalue what I did. If you listen to 3 hours of my show, if you go to a movie theater for 3 hours and with a date, you know, it's going to cost you $50 and you're going to be tired. So is what we do worth $50 to you? We just ask the question. And it turns out if you ask people to send whatever it's worth to them in money, and value is, of course, very, you know, subjective per individual, a lot of people will send you $5. A significant amount will send you $50. Some will send you $500, and one or two will send you $5,000 if you just ask for it. Now, we we don't have any commercials or any corporate interest. So we take two slots within our 3-hour show to read the notes associated with the highest donations of the day. And we've taken a playbook out of Hollywood. Anyone who donates $200 or above is an associate executive producer for that episode. Mm-hmm. They're producers, after all. They're our producers. We've established
that's
that.
That's what it is.
And $300 or above, you're an executive producer. And these are real titles. You know, you can people put them on their LinkedIn. They've received jobs through it. We'll vouch for you if anyone questions you whatsoever. And usually those notes are often about someone's professional opinion on something or just a, hey, can I have the whole group send out a little bit of good karma for my mom who's has cancer. Right. I mean it's mainly good stuff, but we do have a karma thing that people ask for. And really the producers themselves have determined what that segment is. A lot of it is numerology. It's like, hey, I'm sending you $420. Okay, guess why? Oh, it's 420. You know, Pi Day on March 14th, there's always people sending $314.
And there's a lot of 33s. A lot of 33s, I bet.
A lot of 33s, a lot of 42s, a lot of 69s. and what's cool about it is we literally are giving the numbers on the show. So it's not like we're hiding what's coming in. You know, it's like, here's the money that came in. And we're really proud of that. And then we do a second segment, which is just people and their location and donation amount. And that's between $50 and $200. And that goes a little bit faster. But, you know, we also do birthdays, you know, some typical kind of radio stuff. We have meetups where people around the world organize and hang out and talk about the show or topics that are discussed on the show. And of course, a producer built a website for that, noagendameetups.com. I think it's Sir Neil who did that. It's better than meetups.com, that's for sure.
Yeah.
You know, and then
that site went to hell, by the way. Yeah. Meetups.com.
We're really a community, or more like a tribe in a way. And mm-hmm. I think that's very typical for postmodern media like what we do. You know, you have a DH Unplugged tribe, you have a Disciplined Investor tribe, right. You know, those overlap. Some of them overlap with the No Agenda tribe, which overlaps with the Rogan tribe. And so there's all these connective pieces of tissue that float around each other and sometimes connect. You know, then, you know, Tom Woods is another person who kind of comes into our sphere. There's all these different, different media tribes. And in order to kind of show seniority, and to have goals because people wanted them. If you've donated an aggregate up to $1,000 to the show, then you become a knight of the No Agenda Roundtable or a dame. And you get an actual signet ring with sealing wax and a certificate. And people go to meetups and they show their ring. respect, man. And it's thinking of, well, here's, I think of money as content almost. Because the way it's being used, it translates directly to content,
yeah.
Whether it's the number or the aggregate amount that achieves status. And I think we're moving in general towards a world where we're going to think very differently about money and how it works and how we use it in our day-to-day lives. Extremely quickly.
This is a bit of a altered barter system in a way. Right? Because they're getting enjoyment out of an information and education and whatever they're getting out of the show. And they are giving what they can, whether it's a slice of salami or whether it's a YouTube integration of something or a website. I mean, it's kind of a barter system that you've created. It's your own coins. I mean, theoretically, not digital, but your own coin.
Well, it's time, talent, and treasure. And barter, isn't that exactly what value for value is?
Exactly.
I value this donkey and you value your sister.
Okay. We'll end that there. So I want to get into this discussion of...
That was really bad of me. I'm sorry. I don't know where that came from.
I didn't know what to do. I was stuck. I always
cut it out of the podcast, and you cut it right out. Man, I'm a boob. Oh, boy.
All right. So I want to talk about No Agenda for a second because it's so fascinating. One of the things that you do, I'm going to kind of go through a few different things here and liven up. One of the things you have is I find an issue with modifiers. And you may think, what the hell is this guy talking about? Adjectives, adverbs, it's very prevalent throughout this. Did you know that?
What are you talking about?
The coronavirus coordinator, Dr. Deborah Birx, had this to say about combating this dangerous new surge. Listen to this.
Here's Shep Smith. We'll check in, see what he's doing on his brand new show on CNBC.
This is researchers at the University of Washington releasing a grim new projection. Their model...
Nothing like what you're about to hear in part two.
Can you respond to the Columbia University report that just came out, the study where researchers blasted the Trump administration over its disastrous handling of the pandemic? The authors write, we estimate at least 130,000.
So you have this kind of way of of trying to accentuate the accentuated.
Yes. Well, we deconstruct the media. So, you know, as we always say,
Matter,
you know, and when you have a mainstream media pumping fear into people by using, you know, wave analogies and you know, another of our favorites is the president slammed Nancy Pelosi. You know, that's like serious. That's CBS News who uses these terms. Like, come on, you know, that shows huge bias.
Well, that's the point, isn't it? They're trying to accentuate that whole thing. If I say there's a massive amount of protesters that were seen in New Jersey today, I mean, you know, what do we know what that means? You know, is that
well, Vegas? how about peaceful protesters? I mean, it works both ways.
Right. Or there were protesters in New Jersey today talking about this, or a surge in COVID cases globally, or a deluge of rain.
A spike, a surge.
Yep, exactly.
Yeah.
We're going to talk about some of the conspiracy theories I want to talk about. Number one, recently brought up this whole idea that Bill and Melinda Gates possibly are maybe either kidnapped, held somewhere, and they're actually what is being presented today in the news are either, I would assume, aliens or body doubles.
Okay. So just for context, when it comes to these types of stories,
you think that needs context?
I usually preface it by saying, hey, I'm just telling you this because this is what I'm reading about, and we leave it at that. And the reason why is about 6 weeks ago, we got a crazy note that said, hey, there's crazy-ass hard drives out there from Hunter Biden, and it was, you know, these were designed to take down Joe Biden, and they come from China, and, you know, here's all the things that were attached to them. And we read that on the show, like, okay, all right. And John even said, okay, signed QAnon. I said, I don't know, I just read it. But then all of a sudden, there's a hard drive, and there's Hunter Biden, and there's all this stuff. So we can say there's no conspiracy theories, but then we can't say there's coincidences either.
No, I agree with
so
that.
I'd like to highlight. I like to highlight everything that I think is newsworthy. Most of our show is not that type of you know, completely unfounded information. But yeah, a lot of this stuff. I mean, we've done this show long enough that sometimes I'm actually bored by a topic. You know, it's like, I'm like, seriously, you're just now figuring out that Build Back Better is not just Joe Biden's campaign, but has been used by the United Nations and the World Economic Forum with their great reset and almost every other country that is probably held hostage by China. We just heard the Prime Minister of New Zealand say it again in her re-election speech. You know, this is a globalist takeover, and it's being completely ignored. And you know, I'm hammering on that for months, and now people are like, "Oh, hey, this is really weird. I see this Build Back Better everywhere."
And like, just to put a little bit of backstory on this. The whole point here is, I guess this comes from back, especially during the financial crisis, when the idea was that, hey, let's not let any crisis go to waste. So therefore, this Build Back Better was a globalist phenomena where, well, you know, we got the pandemic and we got people right where we want them, scared as hell. So let's insert in.
It's the party of Davos. This is the World Economic Forum. This is Klaus. This is the Great Reset. And it's every word that comes out of Joe Biden's mouth is we're going to have good paying union jobs, green jobs. Sure. That's the idea. You know, get a lock on the green stuff, whatever that is. You know, have hundreds of billions in subsidies. I see you, Frans Timmermans, in the European Union with his Green New Deal. And you know, he's garnering 700 billion euros to get that going. I mean, this is a bonanza. And of course, they're all in on it. This has been from day one. Look at the
You got to bring this down to Al Gore. We said it at the same time.
What's that?
We said that at the same time. The word Al Gore were said at the same time, you and I.
Yeah. Al Gore had the carbon credit exchange all lined up, all ready to go. You know, these guys are business guys.
Now, what about Bilderberg?
Drinking club. I think it shows you that the World Economic Forum is really, they're really the douchebags right now. Bilderberg is, I don't know, it's the old money. It's also not the same people. You know, Bilderberg, you're sure some of the same people attend, but Bilderberg is really more the old money, old Europe, probably more Rockefeller centric. And World Economic Forum is more Rothschild. You know, as long as I can print the money, I don't care who makes the laws. And that's what's going on. And I see a lot of these moves now with the CBDCs. Like, okay, well, this will be fun. We got Christine Lagarde, who moved from the IMF. Now she's the head of the
I don't know how that happened. That is bizarre. It was like, okay, you're going to follow along.
Because she's a part of the system, man. She's upper echelons of the system. Of course, she's right now, I'm not making it up, is shepherding in, or she's talking about shepherding in, the digital euro. Well, that'll be fun.
Mm. What about your cell phone issues?
Well, it's not just cell phone issues, but the era of free has really made us quite enslaved.
Yeah.
Because we're taking all this free stuff, then the enslavement comes in very subtle ways because you're tracked and you're monitored and you're managed and you're nudged continuously. And the best example of this is Credit Karma or these types of apps, where they're not even showing you a FICO score. They're just showing you their score. And they are managing people by tracking their behavior, understanding where they go, who they associate with, what they buy, matching it with real-world purchases and behaviors, and offering you credit at attractive rates at an attractive time for you. And they're giving you a little meter to be all jacked about that your credit score went up, when all that means is you're really borrowing more money. It's cynical and it's really evil, I think, how people are being treated in this system. And when you use any app like Venmo, which uses Plaid networks, and I'm interesting that Visa is having trouble closing that deal. That, you know, Plaid, their whole system is middleware that acts as you, the user, by logging into your bank account, which you have given the credentials for, and then to act as if you're on your own banking website to create these transactions. But of course, it can also see what's going on your banking site once you give it full access to credentials. So they know, and there's kids who love this new service, which it'll go in my bank account and it tells me, oh, I can get a better deal on my cable bill. It's analyzing their entire accounts.
Well, not only that, cash is not even being used by the kids anymore.
Well, this is the true travesty of the coronavirus. We lost cash. It's not coming back. It's over. It's done with. It's dirty. And by the way, I'm see you, China. I saw when they were showing video of them washing the money because it could contain coronavirus.
That was ridiculous. That was ridiculous.
Andrea goes along with the videos of people falling over dead in the streets of Wuhan. Thank you, China. Thank you, TikTok. I think that affected a lot of people. New York Times reported that algorithms were pushing those videos very hard right to Italy just before they had, you know, their shutdown.
For the purpose of what? World dominance by China? That's the point you're making?
Yeah, yeah. I'm making that accusation. Yeah.
All right.
Well, yeah, but I think, hey, Andrew, okay, look at the NBA. They own the NBA. The NBA, LeBron James is China's bitch. He will do, I'll say whatever I can say.
Well, because they cut him off and that was hitting their pockets. I mean, I get it.
Big time.
Right.
Big time. Right. Big time. They own academia. They own Hollywood. Hollywood. They own Hollywood. They own the media.
How much different is this, though, than what Japan did back in the early, late 80s when they were buying up Rockefeller Center, where they were buying, everybody had to watch, oh my God, the Japan Inc., you know, where they all exercise in the yard before they do their, you know, go to their offices or their manufacturing post. And they were buying up golf courses in Pebble Beach. And how's that different?
Right. It's not different. Oh. Well, it is in two ways. One, little smaller than China.
Small. Yep.
Two, they didn't own all of our manufacturing. But where it's similar is we got them. We got them in the end. We got them.
Yep.
We took care of them.
We'll see what happens. Back. Yep. Let's play everybody's favorite game, word association. 10 words, whatever firm comes first to your mind. It's not really everybody's favorite. I just made that up.
Yeah. Okay.
Here we go. Ready? Here we go. Anything that comes to mind. You can use one or two words. I'll give you one or two words. Ready? Media.
Deconstruction.
33.
The magic number.
Keeper.
My lovely wife, Tina.
JCD. Pass.
No. I'm not going to pass. The reason I didn't say it right away is like, oh my God, that's a horrible thing to say. But my work wife.
Congress.
Term limits.
Austin.
Savable.
Vaccine.
Low trust.
CNN's Anderson.
Pooper.
Orange.
Man bad.
And swoop.
Orange man bad.
Swooping sound.
I wasn't ready for that one.
Let me do it again. Swooping sound.
No, wait. It takes me a second to get that. I'm sorry. What did you say, Andrew?
Oh, I said swooping sound.
Oh, swooping sound. You mean like some kind of beast that's flying overhead? Oh, no, ladies and gentlemen, the election is near. It looks like her. Oh, no, it's Hillary Clinton.
I want to finish up with a couple things here.
Overhead.
I want to talk about Podcast Index, which is your newest. Hold it. We're going to hold that. I want to talk about MoFax.
Ah, okay.
I want to talk about MoFax. This is another podcast that you started not too long ago. Tell us a little bit about what you're trying to, I don't want to say accomplish, but what you're doing.
About a year and a half ago, in our regular deconstruction of the media for No Agenda, I came across this clip of Joy Reid from MSNBC and a couple other people talking about so-called Russian bots that were propagating this ADOS or DOS, and it was American descendants of slavery or descendants of slaves. And it's whenever MSNBC says Russian bots, I'm like, oh, okay, let me look into this. So I look into it, and I mention this on the show, and I get an email from this guy, Mo. And he says, hey, man, let me try and explain a little bit what's going on with American descendants of slavery. And we're just going back on email. Actually, I think it was DM on Twitter for a while because I was just winding up my honeymoon at the time. And like the last day on our way back, I was DMing with this guy all on the plane, even just going, I'm like, wow, this is amazing. All this stuff that I kind of knew, but didn't really understand that I have no, he's black. So just to put into, he's African American descendant of slavery. And he's like,
is that the
40.
New term I have to use now? I don't know what to ever say. I always feel wrong no matter what I say.
Well, he's just an American guy. I mean, right. That's, all but right. In this context of the show,
good guy.
Yeah. He's a good guy. He's a winner. Mm-hmm. I like to hang out with winners.
Yeah.
That's who I hang out with. Mm-hmm. You know, and so, but even the concept of, you know, why does he have to be black? Why can't he just be a man? Mm-hmm. You know, so, And what we kind of figured out is that, you know, and then we started talking on the phone an hour, a week or something. We're chatting back and forth. And I say, you know, why don't we just record this and turn it into a podcast.
That's exactly what Dvorak and I did to get to.
The same thing I did with Dvorak.
Right.
It's the exact same reason. So, yeah. And it's like, okay, that's really interesting. Let's do this. And so MoFax with Adam Curry was born. And Mo had been, you know, doing some YouTube stuff and, you know, with his own kind of version of deconstructing the news and the media, but more around race issues. And of course, you know, this is the resurgence of Black Lives Matter is taking place. And there's just so much to talk about because race has been, you know, an overarching discussion for the past, you know, well, for a long time, but really in this context for the past, you know, 5-6 years probably. So Mo has an incredible, he's kind of like a, he's like a preacher in a way. He's putting together a sermon he's putting together the clips. And he is building a picture, usually based upon a current topic. And he'll show me the background of it and show me where, I mean, just as a, one of the things that blew me away right in the beginning is really this issue of colorism and color and skin color. The historically black colleges and universities, when they were first started by white men, they did not allow any black person to enroll if their skin color was darker than a brown paper bag. They call it the brown paper bag test. Ugh. You know, when you go from that into No Man About the House, which was a rule in order to be on welfare for families that couldn't make enough money, you could have wife, kids, but there could be no man in the house. So men were literally forced out of the house. You know, and when you look at that and you say, hey, man, maybe that's part of the reason why we have 75% of today, not just black youth, but all youth, it's not just a skin color issue. Why, you know, certainly in poor neighborhoods, there's just no dads around.
Mm-hmm.
The whole baby mama culture, you know, comes from this. So when you start to deconstruct that, and when you look at some of the other people that you and I, Andrew, didn't learn about in school, like Malcolm X, mm-hmm. and what his message really was for, I mean, you look at it through a media deconstruction lens, you see that Martin Luther King was a lot more of a brand maybe than he was the preacher that he's held up to be. And there's this one famous quote by the 20 seconds by Malcolm X, and this is exactly what our show is.
First, the white man and the black man have to be able to sit down at the same table. The white man has to feel free to speak his mind without hurting the feelings of that Negro. And the so-called Negro has to feel free to speak his mind without hurting the feelings of the white man. Then they can bring the issues that are under the rug out on top of the table and take an intelligent approach to get the problem solved. That's the only way that they'll ever do it.
And that's exactly what we do. And we both come to the table and we can... There's no butt hurt over anything. We share as men, we're sharing our experiences with just two totally different backgrounds. And you see that my parents messed me up the same way his parents messed him up.
Yeah.
So that we actually couldn't connect in the middle.
Right.
I mean, it's crazy stuff.
Yeah.
And this has caught fire, this show. I'm very proud of this work. And, you know, notice it's MoFax with Adam Curry. So I take a back seat, but I'm actively involved in the questioning of issues and, you know, hey, how did you feel about that? You know, something small. So how did you feel about that? And he said, how did I feel about that? And it's the simplest thing. And that's all it is. And, you know, I know there, my stepdaughter can't listen to the show. She'd be so triggered over it.
Oh, trigger. You know, don't even start.
You know, so this is for people who are wanting to listen to a mature conversation driven from knowledge and facts and history about where we are today. And it is the highlight, I'm very blessed, but it's such a highlight for me to do this show. Every single time I'm like, oh my God, it has enriched me so much. You know, I'm not racist. I'm not going to be called racist. I'm not going to allow anyone to call me racist.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm also not going to listen to people who think they're doing the work by reading Robin DiAngelo's book. Screw that. We're doing the real work. We're having real conversations and understanding how we really got here today. That's it's awesome. Worth checking out.
That's awesome. I want to finish up on, and I'm going to be honest with you, I don't get it. Not that I don't get it in a bad way. I just never really looked into it because I figure my friend Adam's got it, and that's good for me, which is podcast index. Now, when I say that, I don't want to sound stupid and dumb. I'm just saying, I figure this is something you're working on. I figure that I'm probably included somehow in this whole thing, and I don't have to worry about knowing too much about it. But I could be wrong. That's why I'm bringing this up. What is this all about?
Okay. When Steve Jobs asked me to come meet with him in 2006, and I had an hour-long conversation with him, one-to-one, which rivaled my interview with Quincy Jones. I was incredibly impressed with this man. And he felt like he was really on our side, and I believe he was. And he wanted my blessing to put podcasting into iTunes. This is before the iPhones or the iPod. And of course, I said, yeah, bitch, let's do it. And I said, and I'm going to give you my index so you can get started. So, because you know, we were maintaining kind of an open source index of all the podcasts in all different countries. And I had, it was decentralized or widely distributed. So country managers would add the podcasts in their country and they could delegate down to other people who were specialized in certain areas, technology, travel, finance, et cetera. So we had a pretty good organization and overview, which translated into the iTunes podcast directory. Now, Apple has always been a good steward of podcasting, but I'm kind of messed up on this one. And then it wasn't something I really could be thinking about because in my life as a broadcaster, I've built transmitters, you know, so a podcast feed to me is a very natural thing to focus on. It's a transmitter without electricity, really, without sending something through the air. You know, the production side, I never had to worry about radios. You know, radios are everywhere. Everyone has a radio. You can listen to me on the radio. Turn on the radio. Everyone's got a radio. Well, today's radio for podcasts is an app. And the app developers who I'd been working with and working with on the daily source code, they kind of got blown out of the water right away because, you know, here was this behemoth of all things, although the Windows stuff that was independent went on for a while because Apple didn't only had this on the Mac for the longest time. Apple allowed the independent podcast app developers to hook into their index, their database, to retrieve information because maintaining a database of all the, it's about 1.5 million. I mean, there's a lot of dead ones too, but really there's 1.5 million podcast feeds right now in the universe. And I'd say about 400,000, 500,000 are truly, really active more than once a month. But it's a mess. I mean, the way feeds are put together, things are different. You know, it's hard to maintain that database. Now, with Apple, everyone has kind of come to expect that to get into podcasting, you submit your podcast to Apple, Apple approves it, and then you're kind of everywhere. And now we have an additional player, which is Spotify and iHeart. And so the original way to create a podcast app was tie into Apple, and you're kind of good to go, and you can create, you know, a little experience. Now, Apple has just more or less left podcasting for what it is. There's been no innovation because no matter what you do on the outside, if you want to add something like chapters or transcripts, something that everybody can use, well, you can create your feed differently, but if it doesn't go into Apple's database, no one else can get it. So that's been a frustrating thing for a lot of people because podcasting hasn't really innovated, certainly on, you know, commenting and interactive features that should be independent of any podcast app. Something else happened. Apple decided for business reasons to deplatform a couple of podcasts, taking them out of their index as part of their necessity to conform to cancel culture as a public company. And it's irrelevant to me what those podcasts were, but they did it. That was the first signal. The second one, not long after I'd met Joe Rogan and become friends with him and been on his show, he got a great deal to move to Spotify. But he's moving to Spotify and leaving the open podcast space. I think that happens in December. Well, this is a real problem for my radio guys. because the radio makers, i.e. the app, the podcast app developers, they now no longer can say, listen to Joe Rogan.
Yeah.
So they just lost a huge opportunity.
Which for, is the equivalent of an anchor store in a mall. Like it used to be.
Well, I'll take it one step further. I'm very happy for Joe. I mean, it's fantastic. It's great. And I'm happy that he's with Spotify and Spotify. And we'll talk about that in a second. They're clearly trying to bring in audience that listens to podcasts. And so they've purchased some audiences and they're going to work on the conforming people who use their radio only for music. Remember, they had just a music radio app, right, essentially, now into a music and podcast app. And we'll see how that goes. But I need to have the infrastructure on the other side of the big money where the next five Joe Rogans can flourish. So a couple things, as I set out with two missions. One, preserve podcasting as a platform for free speech.
Okay.
So that means I have to create a shadow index which not only contains everything Apple and Spotify and iHeart have, but it's also the place where every feed is. So even the ones that don't exist on Apple or Spotify. You know, Spotify just kicked off four podcasts because they were, quote, propagating conspiracy theories about QAnon. So, you know, so when they're kicked off Spotify, people don't notice them, they're gone. And if people only have the opportunity to listen to podcasts in Spotify or Apple, they're going to miss that. So that means I can have the biggest database in the world of all the podcast feeds in the world, but I need to have radio receivers. And what's the problem is in every deal flow in podcasting, the guys who are doing the apps, the radios that we need so desperately, have been excluded. They've been trying to use banner ads and, you know, maybe they try to do some statistics that they again can sell for banner ads, you know, they add very expensive features and, you know, they're charging money on a subscription basis. Very few are making any money that way. And so they need to be cut into the deal flow. Mm-hmm. So the second mission is retool podcasting as a platform of value. And that is what is going to be podcasting 2.0. So what we've achieved to date is a podcastindex.org. There are now 10 to 15 podcast apps that are either existing or newly created with very different experiences. There's new cool apps coming out that now allow you to access all of podcasts. They have very specific features, which because we're now going outside of Apple, we have chapters that pop up automatically. So if we're on this podcast, I'm talking about Think New Ideas, in one or two of the apps already, up pops a web page, just automatically pops up.
Wow.
It's kind of like show notes on the fly. There's one guy who is going to use the geotag notes or geotag element. So if you're walking around Berlin, you could see, oh, what podcasts are being produced near me.
Oh, that's interesting.
And get a list of kind of, so all this creativity is now possible because we have created this resource. Now, important is that the index and all its categories will be free for anybody. You can download a whole copy of it. We do complete SQL database dumps, and you can synchronize with it, or you can talk to us, put it on IPFS, put it on BitTorrent. We want it everywhere. Now, for podcasting 2.0, this means that we have to have an alternative method to making money for people that includes the podcast app developers that is not advertising. And it can't be advertising because advertising is censorship. It's just a fact.
Well, it could turn into that. Yeah, and that's why some of these players were pushed off Spotify, because the big players said, hey, get them off or we're pulling.
Advertising is censorship. It's just a fact. I can see my friend Joe self-censoring, and I know why, and I get it. And I've done that for a long time in mainstream. It's what it is. But when I say free speech, I mean it. And, you know, I'm hearing right now Section 230 is being discussed in Congress, mm-hmm. and everyone's already talking about hate speech as if it's some defined thing. you know, well, we can't have hate speech. Well, I hate you. I hate you.
That's a hate speech.
Now you're going to take me, you're going to deplatform me. Beep. Come on. Come on, man. So this is ridiculous.
Yeah.
And when I say, again, podcasting is the definition of free speech. It is what we are doing. So we need to free podcasting from corporate control. That's why I'm doing this. And we're going to do that by integrating decentralized content with decentralized money. So we are ultimately building a self-sustaining ecosystem for podcasting where value, let's just call it money in this case,
mm-hmm.
goes to the partners that are a part of keeping this on the air, which is the podcaster. It's the podcast app. It's the podcaster's co-host, their promoter, their investor, maybe their hosting company. And we're going to make this frictionless so that every single time you want to push value back, so you're receiving value, typically an MP3 in your ears, and you'll have a mechanism to have value flowing back automatically on a time basis to all of these different parties. It's a next generation idea. It works. We'll be launching it, you know, softly. We have to have a lot of developers. You know, can't just have one app that does this. And I think if it picks up speed, it'll change the game for everybody. And I'll give you the numbers. According to the Interactive Agency Bureau, whatever it is, the IAB, there are 100 million Americans, just using those numbers, who on average listen to 1 hour of podcast per day, 7 days a week.
Mm-hmm.
I believe, based upon 13 years of experience, where we have a much higher percentage, I believe that podcast hosts can convert at best minimum 1% of those 100 million to participate in a value for value form of compensating the podcaster and the ecosystem for their work.
Yeah, I agree with that.
Patreon proves that. Donations to DH Unplugged prove that. Donations to the No Agenda Show, Mo Facts, it all proves that. In fact, the index is running right now on donations. People who just think it's a good idea. 1%, so that leaves me with 1 million hours a day. If we value that at $1, that's a lot of money you can flow throughout a system.
So what does someone who has a podcast right now have to do to get included on the podcast index?
Well, you're probably there. If you are with any of the bigger hosting companies, you're already there. If not, go to podcastindex.org and there's a little search box. And actually, when you type in your show name, the way it's returned, you click on your podcast. It's quite beautiful. You can send someone that page just by itself, little players in each episode. We do all the artwork the right way. We have 150 people working on this project right now, all open source, all in there for their own reasons. We got guys making apps. We got people making services. Everyone's, really excited about all the new features that are coming. So make sure it's there. If it's not, then there's a little button you hit and we'll make sure it gets added.
That's good.
And from there, just keep an eye on my Twitter. Keep an eye on the blog. If you want to get invested in it, you can go to podcastindex.social, which is a Mastodon social network server where you can sign up and everyone's on there. We're talking about, what we're doing. If you're a developer, you can just select, I'm a developer, and you can get access to the API and you can join in. Hmm. The more the merrier. And already we are changing. I mean, when you get a hosting company like Buzzsprout, who have, 300,000-400,000 customers with at least one feed, they make some changes and new functionality pops out. It's pretty cool. So, possibly this Thursday, I'll be telling No Agenda listeners to check out a couple of different apps to see this cool new chapters feature, which, by the way, on one of these apps, they can actually, while they're listening to the show, put in their own chapter, which comes back to me, which I approve, which flows right back to everybody else.
Wow.
Yeah, WOW is right.
This is, we're going from FM transmitters. We're going from pirate radio, MTV, Adam Curry's top 30 hits, all the way through the Daily Source Code into RSS feeds and Apple, No Agenda podcast, MoFax, now podcast 2.0. I like it.
Well, when you say it like that, yeah, it like sounds kind of weird.
Oh, well, there you go.
Well, but look at what I've done. It's obvious. I started with technology and the content.
Yep.
With my 15-year-old boy self making my transmitter, playing, spinning the records. It's what I do.
I like it. I like it. Adam Curry, check out all that there is. Your Twitter is at Adam Curry, just one word, right? And, yep. Of course, we'll have all the information how to listen and to find and to see and to go on the show notes for episode number 686 of The Disciplined Investor on thedisciplinedinvestor.com. Thanks so much for joining me. I appreciate it.
It's my pleasure, Andrew. And for everybody who's listening to this show, I'm going to make you rich. I'm going to make you leave your wife rich. You'll buy stocks and bonds. It's going to be great.
All right, buddy. Talk to you soon. And that's going to wrap this episode of The Disciplined Investor. I hope you enjoyed it. Check out No Agenda, of course, on Thursdays and Sundays. You can go to anywhere that has a great podcast to download it after it's done or listen to it live at 12 p.m. on Thursdays and Sundays. Just type in No Agenda Stream and you'll get there. Thanks a lot for joining me. I'll see you again next week. Nothing discussed in this podcast should be considered a recommendation to buy or sell any security. Past performance is no indication of future results. In addition, the information presented is not intended to be used as the sole basis of any investment decisions, nor should be construed as advice designed to meet the individual needs of any particular investor. Nothing herein constitutes legal, accounting, or tax advice, or individually tailored investment advice. Remember, investing involves substantial risk. Past performance is not a guarantee of future results, and a loss of original capital may occur. No one receiving or accessing this information should make any investment decision without first consulting his or her own personal financial advisor and conducting his or her own research and due diligence, including carefully reviewing any applicable prospectuses, press releases, reports, and other public filings of the issuer of any securities being considered. Please consider this for educational purposes only. As always, use your best judgment when investing. Horowitz & Company, Inc. is registered as an investment advisor with the state of Florida and conducts business in other states where it is properly registered or is excluded from registration requirements. Registration does not imply any level of skill or training.